go ahead and turn to Psalm 37 and verse 32. We're going to cover this verse tonight and then spend the next, I think, 3 weeks getting through the rest of them. Psalm 37 and verse 32, it says, "The wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him." And as I was just thinking about just this verse from a broad standpoint, it's not exactly a comforting thing to think about, but this is a fact that this actually does happen in this world. Thankfully, it doesn't happen very much and very often, but there are actually wicked people out there that do watch the righteous and seek to slay them. There are deranged psychopaths out there that just kill people just for the fun of it, and thankfully that's rare. And there are enemies of God out there that would kill somebody for their faith, like Cain killed Abel, basically, because his sacrifice was accepted and Abel's wasn't, or Cain's wasn't. And then there's like thieves I was thinking about in Proverbs chapter 1, that there are just wicked people out there that will just wait and lie in wait and kill somebody to take their stuff from them. And it's kind of a disturbing thing to think about. Proverbs 1, verses 10 through 19. Solomon says, "My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause." Basically, let us lay wait, watch, and to slay. "Let us swallow them up alive as the grave, and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in thy lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and make haste to shed blood." Now, I have that verse underlined in green in my Bible, and what that means is that it's a quote that is quoted in the New Testament, and it's quoted over in Romans chapter 3. And we don't have to go there, but you're probably familiar with that verse, where Paul gives the description of the natural man, of the person, of the man that doesn't seek after God and doesn't do good and things like that. And one of the things that he says is their feet are swift to shed blood. And this is where he's quoting from. So Paul is, when he references that verse, he's using that as a proof of what is in the heart of natural men. People apart from the grace of God, which is all of us, before God saves us, all of us by nature are swift to shed blood. So the description here in Proverbs chapter 1, as heinous as that sounds, that could be any one of us apart from the grace of God. We could be doing that very thing. And that's basically what Paul's quote of that proves. It says, surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, and they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. So this is one instance, and this is like what David's talking about, watching the righteous, waiting to shed blood. And I don't recommend that people are paranoid, but I do recommend that you watch. And I'm going to talk about that later on in this study tonight. And I've been watching a YouTube channel for a while. It's called Active Self-Protection. It's done by a guy that used to be a preacher, and what he does is he gets videos sent to him from all over the world, mainly in South America and some of the more dangerous parts of the world, and they're surveillance videos of crimes, mainly robberies and muggings and things like that, or just assaults and stuff. And then it's usually, well, either the person defended themselves or didn't defend themselves, and he goes through it, and then he goes through it step by step, and he, in slow motion, he shows you what the person did right, what they did wrong, and sometimes the bad guy loses, and sometimes he wins. But anyway, I've learned a ton just by watching that. And one of the things that he always preaches is just to be aware. Don't be paranoid, but be aware. And so when I'm out there walking around, like in the mornings when I take my walk, I'm just kind of have my head up. I'm not afraid. I'm not paranoid, but I'm just paying attention. When I come out of a store and I go out to the car, I'm just kind of just glance around, you know, just to make sure, you know, it's just a good idea just to watch and pay attention. And I'll give you a few verses for that in a little bit. But David had firsthand experience with this, because David's the one that wrote this psalm. If you look at 1 Samuel 19 and verse 11, 1 Samuel 19 verse 11, David had wicked men, just like he's talking about, watching his righteous soul waiting to kill him. First Samuel 19 verse 11 says, Saul also sent messengers unto David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, if thou save not thy life tonight, tomorrow thou shalt be slain. So when David was writing Psalm 37, 32, he was probably in the back of his mind thinking, yep, I'm going to write this down because this very thing happened to me. He experienced this thing with Saul. The Apostle Paul, likewise, experienced people watching, waiting for him to kill him. I hope I don't give anybody nightmares tonight or something, because I'm not trying to. But. Acts 9 and verse 24. Let me just get down to verse 23. And after that many days were fulfilled, the Jews took counsel to kill him, that is Paul, or Saul as he was called at this time. But their laying in wait was known of Saul, and they watched the gates day and night to kill him. Then the disciples took him by night and let him down by the wall in a basket. So it's always neat whenever you can read in the scripture and liken it to your own situation and think, yes, I've been there, I've experienced that deliverance, or, you know, I've experienced that. And in this case, Paul could read Psalm 37, 32 and think, yep, I've been there, and I got let down over the wall in a basket and escaped their hand. And that just tells us there that there's a time to flee. And I think I've covered this before in sermons, but there's a time to fight and a time to flee. And whenever it's time to flee, then there's no cowardice in fleeing. Jesus did it himself. And I actually have a study that I've been working on that I'm going to do on gun rights and self-defense rights, and which I'm surprised 5 years I have not preached on that, and it's kind of an important thing to me, but I haven't done it yet. So anyway, I got a lot of really good stuff. And a lot of the things that I've learned from active self-protection, I have a whole list of things of what to do in self-defense. And the neat thing is, as I was thinking about all the things this guy teaches in there, and then I was thinking, oh, I got a Bible verse for that. I got a Bible verse for that. So almost every single thing I've got a Bible verse for, which is pretty neat. So anyway, I'll get to that here one of these days. So the wicked love to make a man an offender for a word. So the passage here specifically is referring to people that are watching to kill you, right? But we can take this in more of a broad context and maybe make it a little more applicable to our lives, thankfully. Thankfully, the specific application of the verse is not applicable to our lives most of the time, but this could make it applicable in that people are watching us, and they are trying to destroy our lives or our character or our reputation, things like that. And any one of us can experience that in this wicked world. If you look in Isaiah 29 and verse 21, Isaiah 29, 21, this will be a familiar verse to you. Let me just start with verse 20. For the terrible one is brought to naught, and the scorner is consumed, and all that watch for iniquity are cut off, that make a man an offender for a word, and lay a snare for him that reproveth in the gate, and turn aside the just for a thing of naught. So here you have people watching for the soul of the righteous, laying a snare for him to try to make him an offender for what he says. And the idea here is they're going to make you an offender for something that you said that really wasn't anything that's worthy of condemnation. But they're going to find something that they can twist or take out of context, or maybe just a thing that you said that was just, it was stupid. Maybe you told an off-color joke and you thought afterwards, I shouldn't have said that, or whatever. But they're going to take it and blow it out of proportion. They're going to try to ruin you. And this is what they do. They watch for iniquity. But here's the thing that we can take from this. We can take comfort that God takes the side of those who are mistreated like that. But also, think about this. You want to make sure that you're not the one that's doing that, right? Because I'm sure we've all been there where, especially if it's an enemy, if it's somebody we don't like, and we would just love to find something, some little piece of dirt on them that we could go and then expose them and get them in trouble or something. And we want to never be under this condemnation of those that make a man an offender for a word. Because the thing is, we've all said things that we shouldn't have, and if our enemies could get a hold of everything we've ever said, we'd all be condemned, right? And even if our friends could get a hold of everything we've ever said, we'd be condemned too, because we probably, in a stupid moment, have said things about all kinds of people that we wish we would have never said, and we hope that they never find out. And this is what Solomon told us in Ecclesiastes 7, verses 21 through 22. That, you know, if you heard that maybe somebody said something about you behind your back or something, and it wasn't like they were trying to destroy your character, but maybe they just said something that was unkind, or they were gossiping a bit or something like that, just before you get all mad and jump down their throat about it, just remember that you've probably done the same thing, and you would hope that the person that you said it about would just drop it and forget about it too. In Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 21 and 22, it says, "Also take no heed unto all words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee, for oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others." That's just a good old golden rule. You know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Or the King James, the right version is, "As you would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise." So, don't pay attention to every little thing that has been said about you. The wicked will lay wait for the righteous, waiting to see them, see if they can catch them falling into sin, and then report it back to others for revenge against them. And this is another thing we don't want to be caught guilty of, but we also want to be careful that we don't give somebody a reason to go spread an evil report about us as well. So we want to be careful. We want to be watching ourselves. I'll get into that in a little bit. Jeremiah 20. Should have given you the verse ahead of time. Jeremiah 20 and verse 10. This is what wicked people do. "For I heard the defaming of many, fear on every side. Report, say they, and we will report it." I mean, this is like the media. "Give us a report, we'll report this thing. Tell me something bad this guy did. Tell me something he said, and we'll blast this out on the evening news. "Report, say they, and we will report it. All my familiars watched for my halting." This is even his friends, right? They're watching for him to fall. "Saying, peradventure he will be enticed, and we shall prevail against him, and we shall take our revenge on him." This is exactly what the media does. They just dig up dirt on people to try to destroy them. And I got a verse for that. They dig up evil. They love to do this. Dig up evil on the righteous. Proverbs 16 and verse 27. Proverbs 16, verse 27.
That's a really, you know, they're watching for his halting, watching for a weak moment.
Yep, watching for him to stumble. Proverbs 16, 27. "An ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips there is as a burning fire." Anybody that goes looking for evil to dig up on somebody is an ungodly man. It's one thing if you find out about evil that somebody's done, and if you have to judge that person for what they've done and that's worthy of judgment, there's nothing wrong with that. But to go looking for it and to go digging for it and looking back through their Facebook feed for the last 5 years to find some little thing that they said that you can then use against them or whatever, I mean, that kind of thing is what ungodly men do, and we don't want to do that. "In his lips there is as a burning fire." He just has a... There's another proverb where it talks about burning lips and a... I forget, but anyway, he's just waiting to cause harm with his lips, and I can't remember the verse that I'm thinking of, but it says something about burning lips and... I'd have to look it up. I don't remember where it is. This is, if you're ever running for political office, you better be ready for this. I mean, if pretty much you better have a completely clean slate, no skeletons in the closet, if you're running for political office. And the higher the office, the more so. Because they're going to go looking. And it just amazes me, people that have all this baggage in their past that run for political office, and they've got to know it's going to come out. Like Trump with these women, if it's true, and if he paid them off, it probably is. you really think that if you had an adulterous affair with porn stars and Playboy bunnies, that it's not going to come out, and that if you paid them off and had your lawyer pay them off and then paid him through the campaign, that's not going to come out? I mean, you really think that's not going to come out? I guess he just figured he doesn't, I don't know, who knows. He probably figures everybody will forget about it in a while and nobody will care anyway. But anyway, this is what the media does, though. They dig up evil. And with somebody like Trump, it's not all that. You don't have to do that much digging to find some stuff. And a lot of these guys, you don't have to do much digging. It's kind of like hunting for gold, you know, back in the California gold rush. Whenever you first got out there, it's laying all over the stream. I mean, there's not really much digging required. So because the wicked are watching us, then, and they're watching especially to catch us with something that we say to make us an offender, we better set a watch over our mouths. Psalm 141 and verse 3. Psalm 141 and verse 3. And the thing is, nowadays, how much more important is it nowadays? Because a lot of things you say are recorded. There are literally cameras everywhere. Anything you put in an email is pretty much saved by some computer somewhere in perpetuity. And anything you say on social media, anything you say anywhere, there's a paper trail or an electronic trail of it. And then the really scary thing is that they have software now that they can listen to a few minutes of you speaking, and then they can reproduce your voice perfectly and make you say anything they want you to say, and you never said it. And then they have other technology they've been working on where they can put you on video saying things that you never said. And I've seen these videos, it's crazy, where they'll have a guy, the camera looking at a guy, and then on the screen they have the president or some figure, and the guy standing there, he's talking into the camera, and on the TV Trump is saying whatever he's saying. It's crazy. So they could literally take a recording of Trump's voice and then do this multimedia stuff that they have, and they could have some guy on there saying, "I have just ordered the nuclear bombing of Moscow," or something like that, and start a nuclear war. I mean, and he could have never said it, you know. He could be crazy enough to have said it too, so I mean, everybody would probably believe it. But anyway, I mean, it's just, that's the type of thing, that's what we're up against today, if somebody really wanted to get you. Now, most of us, nobody really wants to get us, but you know, if you're a public figure or something and you made a public stink about things, or you've, you know, you're kind of a lightning rod, well, I'll tell you. That's why you just got to put your trust in the Lord, because there's no fighting that kind of stuff. Psalm 141 and verse 3 says, "Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips." And this is a good prayer. There's several prayers throughout the Psalms and throughout the Scripture that are prayers that we ought to pray regularly. Like, "Search me, O God, know my heart, know my thoughts, see if there's any wicked way in me," and things like that. Well, that verse is actually right there, just a couple verses back in Psalm 139, 23, and 24. But this would be another one. "Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips." I think it was Winston Churchill that said, "We are a slave to the words that we let out. We're a master of the words that we keep in, and we're a slave to the words that we let out." It was something to that effect. And there's some truth to that. It's hard to keep them in, and whenever they go out, boy, then you are now led around by them and by anybody that wants to use them against you. Remember what the police always tell you. You have the right to remain silent? You do. Use it in any area of life. And unfortunately, when you're talking to the police, I think it's a good idea. Use it. Don't tell them, because there's a lot of good cops out there, but there's some bad ones too. Or they could just have bad memories and misremember what you said, and before you know it, you're dragged to court, and, "Well, you said this," and, "No, I didn't," or whatever. So I recommend, just don't use your right to remain silent. So getting back to what David said, "The wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him." This is exactly what they did to our Lord Jesus Christ. He probably took the brunt of this more than anybody else. They watched him in order to accuse him. Mark chapter 3 and verse 2. Mark chapter 3 and verse 2. says, and they watched him, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day, that they might accuse him. Here's a poor guy with a withered hand. He probably had a withered hand his entire life. If it's withered, I mean, it's not like he just, you know, cut it or something the other day. It's messed up, probably from birth. So the guy has a withered hand, which would have been, you know, quite an affliction to have. And instead of them watching to see if he would heal him and give glory to God because he healed him, no, they're watching to see if he can heal him to condemn him for doing so on the Sabbath day. What a bunch of wicked people. Right? They are going to major on the minors, and do they really even care about the Sabbath? Probably not. Right? Would they pull their ox out of a ditch on the Sabbath? You bet they would. If nobody was looking, I'm sure they'd do anything that they needed to do on the Sabbath. But they want to use the Sabbath law, they want to frame mischief by a law, and they want to condemn the Son of God for doing good on the Sabbath day. Look at Luke 6 and verse 7. Luke 6 and verse 7. This is the type where Jesus said of some people that, you know, what shall I say about this generation? I've piped and you haven't danced. I've mourned and you haven't wept. There's just certain people that you are never going to be able to please. It didn't matter what he'd done with these Pharisees. He could have tiptoed around and never even left his house on the Sabbath day, and they would have still watched him, right? It doesn't matter what you do. You're never going to placate and please these kinds. Luke 6 and verse 7. It says, and the scribes and Pharisees watched him, whether he'd heal on the Sabbath day, that they might find an accusation against him. This is what a good man Jesus Christ was. Because any of us, you think about it, they wouldn't have to watch us too carefully. They wouldn't have to be paying attention whether we're going to heal on the Sabbath day. They would just have to kind of just be barely paying attention, and they would have something to accuse us and condemn us for, because we're all sinners. But Jesus, they had nothing on him. They got to watch him to see if he's going to do something on the Sabbath day. Because he never uttered a foul word, he never slandered anybody, he never had a proud look, he never stole anything, never harmed anybody in any way, never broke God's law, never used the Lord's name in vain, never looked at a woman with lust in his heart, never did anything that the rest of us have done many times. Look at Luke 14 and verse 1. And it came to pass, as he went into the house of one of the chief Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath day, that they watched him. And behold, there was a certain man before him which had the dropsy. So there again. And then Jesus goes into some dialogue with him and asks him if it's lawful to heal on the Sabbath day or not. And then he ends up basically outsmarting them to where they can't answer him, because he says that he uses the example that I just gave, you know, which I got from him, of course, that if you had an ox fall into a pit, you'd pull him out, wouldn't you? But you're going to condemn me for making a man whole on Sabbath day. But there they are, watching, waiting for him. Then they watched him, and they wanted to not only see what he would do, like with the Sabbath, but see if they could find something that he would say that they could then twist his words and somehow get him in trouble for what he said. You see, these guys are watching not to learn, but to harm. You know, watching Jesus when he was here would have been a great thing to do. And if I could have watched him 24 hours a day, I would have done it. But not to harm, to learn, right? That's what they should have been doing. In Matthew 22 and verse 15, they were going to try to make him an offender for a word. Matthew 22 and verse 15. And I realize now, like, when you preach or when I do these video blogs, and some of the video blogs that I did, I would have had no idea that they were going to get tens of thousands of views, or I would have been way more careful and parsed every single word and made sure everything was just perfect. But at the time, I'm just sitting in my living room and I'm not thinking about any of that. And I'm not saying that I said things intentionally wrong or anything, but I would have just been very, very careful. And now you look at them, you're like, oh, I wish I would have, you know, been a little bit more careful with things. Because then any little thing you say and you slip up, they're watching. They're going to try to get you on it. So, I mean, if it was anything, it was just outright wrong, I'd just delete the video, you know, but it's not a big deal. But still, anyway, Matthew 22 and verse 15. Then went the Pharisees and took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk. And that's a lot of times how this is what wicked people do, is that if they want to get you, they get you talking. And then if they can, they provoke you a little bit. And then, because that's it, you can really get, you get somebody going, and then they'll lose their temper, and then they'll say something they shouldn't, and then you use it against them. And this is what they were trying to do. And another place said they urged him vehemently. And I don't know if I have that verse, but if I don't, I think you know which one I'm talking about, where they tried to get him to say something that they could use against him. Look at Luke 11 and verse 54. Oh, is it the verse before that? Oh, let me go back there then. I didn't see it. Oh, Luke 11:53? Okay. Let's see here. Well, there you go. Yeah, exactly. Let's get verse 53. And as he said these things unto them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to urge him vehemently and to provoke him to speak of many things. If you get anybody talking for long enough, you'll find something to condemn them with. And a lot of times, if you are in a situation where somebody is trying to do you harm, like if it's some kind of a public dispute or something, if you just let the guy talk long enough, he'll end up condemning himself, and you won't have to do anything. So sometimes just letting them blabber on can be to your advantage. Verse 54, laying wait for him and seeking to catch something out of his mouth that they might accuse him. Just catch anything. Just one misword spoken. They can get him.
Jesus never did.
Never did.
Never did misspeak even.
Not one time.
And it wasn't just not sin, but he didn't just ever make a mistake.
Right.
Because he's perfect as God.
And he never said one word too many either, because Jesus said that we'll give an account for every idle word that's spoken. He's not going to give in a word for an idle word. Or he's not going to give an account for an idle word. So that means that he never spoke an idle word. That everything he said was necessary to say. And he didn't add in anything extra. You think about that.
Wow.
And you think about how short his discourses are with people compared to our discourses. Very short. Doesn't say, you know, a lot of times says very, very little. And a lot of times, it's really interesting when you just read through here and just think about what he's saying, why he's saying it. And sometimes you'll find that it's like he doesn't answer the question. They'll ask him a question directly, and like he's answering around it. But he's doing it for a purpose. He's doing it for a reason. A lot of times, he knows that they're trying to catch him in his talk. So he goes around it and gets to the root of the cause, or he condemns them, or he asks them a question they can't answer. Like sometimes we think it's rude if somebody asks you a question to not answer it, but to ask them a question. But you know what? Jesus did that. They'd ask him a question. He says, I got one for you first. You answer mine, I'll answer yours. You know, John the Baptist, was he from heaven or of men? Oh, boy. If we say he's from heaven, he's going to say, why didn't you believe him? If we say you're of men, the people love him, they're going to stone us. No, we can't tell. He's like, well, then neither will I tell by what authority I do this. You know? Hey, I mean, if he did it, we can do it. There's nothing wrong with answering a question with a question if somebody's trying to trap you with the question, right? Look at Luke 20 and verse 20. And they watched him and sent forth spies, which should feign themselves just men, like they were faking it, that they might take hold of his words, that so they might deliver him unto the power and authority of the governor. So, talk about becoming desperate, because now they're not only just paying attention, they're sending forth people as spies to pretend they're his friends, so maybe they can get in on the inside and hear him slip up and say something in an unguarded moment when he doesn't think his enemies are around. This is what they do. This type of thing, making a man an offender for a word, this is what prosecutors do. Prosecuting attorneys, they basically get you on the stand and they ask you these questions and they try to get some kind of a discrepancy from what you said now, from what you said earlier, and they try to make you an offender for a word. And a lot of times with this, and it's sad, our justice system, so-called, they're not trying to get justice. They're just trying to win at all costs. They're trying to get convictions, because when prosecutors get convictions, they get promoted and they get to be the DA or whatever. And it's really sad. And then what they do is then they will charge you with 50 crimes and say that, you know, if you add all these up, you're going to spend your life in prison. Or you could just plead guilty to this one little one here. and then you'll be okay, and they get plea bargains. And they get a conviction out of that, and it saves the court money, and they don't have to go through the court, and you don't get that big of a sentence. And that's why a lot of these convictions are people, they didn't even commit the crimes. They just confessed to them. It's not about justice. No, it's not. It's really, it's terrible. I would honestly, I mean, I realize we have as the world goes, we probably have a decent justice system compared to a lot of, you know, kangaroo courts and third world nations, and who knows, I definitely wouldn't want to be in court in those countries, but I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be in court in this country either. I really wouldn't. I would do what it says in Proverbs, that every man seeks the ruler's favor, or most men will seek the ruler's favor, but every man's judgment cometh from the Lord. And I would just lay myself at the Lord's feet and just think, I'm not going to try to get the judge's favor. I mean, I'll be nice and respectful, and hopefully he'll like me. But you know what? You go in there praying that the Lord will have mercy, because anything can happen once you get in court. So they watched him, and just like David said, the wicked watch the righteous and seeketh to slay him. And this is exactly what they did to Jesus. They sought to slay him. John chapter 5 and verse 16. John 5 and verse 16. It says, and therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. Terrible thing, healing people on the Sabbath day, and they sought to kill him for it. He saved life on the Sabbath day, and they're going to kill him for it. But you know what? It's not really about the Sabbath with these people, I don't think. They just hated him. They hated him. They were envious of him. He was righteous. They weren't. He was claiming to be the Son of God. And they wanted to reject that. They didn't want that. And this is what they could get him on. That's what I think it was all about. John 8, 37 and 40. Watched him and sought to slay him. John 8, 37. Jesus said, I know that ye are Abraham's seed, but ye seek to kill me, because my word hath no place in you. It's interesting. Was it last week that we were talking about the engraft word, that where God, he like makes sockets in the heart, and then the word of God will fit right in there and resonate with you? Look at what he said there. My word hath no place in you. It wasn't written in their hearts. And whenever he spoke it to them, it didn't resonate. It just grated on them, angered them, irritated them, and they wanted to kill him for it. Verse 40. But now you seek to kill me, a man which hath told you the truth, which I have heard of God. This did not Abraham. You remember when Abraham... We just talked about Abraham on Sunday with Abimelech. Was it Abimelech? No. Who is the king of Gerar? I think it was Abimelech. Is it Abimelech? Yeah. Abimelech reproved Abraham. So did the Pharaoh. They reproved Abraham, and Abraham didn't try to kill him for it. Abraham didn't resent him for it. Right? Abraham took it. This is interesting here. They say they claim to be the children of Abraham. Jesus said, let me just read the verse again. But now you seek to kill me, a man which hath told you the truth, like Abimelech did Abraham, which I have heard of God. This did not Abraham. Abraham didn't try to kill him. But these guys are claiming to be Abraham's seed, and yet they're trying to kill Jesus for telling them the truth. Abraham never tried to kill anybody for telling him the truth, even when the truth hurt. Now, these guys like to watch Jesus so much that even when he was dying on the cross, they still watched him. There were people there that said a watch. Matthew 27, 36 and 54. Matthew 27, 36 and 54. And sitting down, they watched him there. I guess just to make sure he didn't get off the cross or something. And keep watching. Verse 40. And saying, that thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross. Jesus said if they didn't believe Moses and the prophets, neither would they believe the one rose from the dead. If he would have come off the cross, they wouldn't have believed him anyway. You just think about these guys that sat down and watched him there, and just think about what they witnessed. They witnessed a world momentous event. They literally witnessed the salvation of a multitude of men which no man can number. They witnessed something that would change the course of human history. And they thought they were just watching was just some guy dying on a tree. But what they were actually watching was the most important event in all of human history. And then they even watched him after they killed him. Matthew 27:65-66. Because they were afraid the disciples were going to come and steal his body away. Pilate said unto them, "Ye have a watch. Go your way, make it as sure as you can." So they went and made the sepulchre sure, sealing the stone and setting a watch. They watched him when he was alive and tried to kill him. When they were killing him, they watched him, and they watched him after he was dead to make sure he didn't come back alive again. It didn't work. Another way that the wicked lie in wait, that they like to watch the righteous to slay him, is that they try to lie in wait to deceive the righteous into believing lies so that they can destroy their faith. This is another way that you can look at this, or that you can apply it anyway to your own life. Ephesians 4 and verse 14. There's a lot of this going on these days. A lot of wicked people out there teaching false doctrine, lying in wait to deceive, trying to destroy people's faith. It's all over the internet. There is so much heresy out there, it's just unbelievable. Stuff you wouldn't even dream up or think somebody could dream up. Anything you can imagine is out there. I happen to see it all the time with the crazy comments on the videos. Ephesians 4:14. That we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. The wicked watcheth the righteous, seeking to slay him. So this is a form of watching, because when you lie in wait, you are watching, waiting for somebody to come, trying to catch them. Send nice, sharp-looking missionaries over to your house with their nice little shirt and ties, and find unsuspecting people that are, their life's in a mess and a wreck, and these nice clean-cut boys tell them what the church so-called has done for them, and before you know it, they've got them. It happens. Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, all kinds of sleazeballs out there. So because the wicked are watching us, we must be watchful. And this is true naturally and spiritually. So I'll give you naturally first. Naturally, you want to be watching. And like I said, not paranoid, but just paying attention. Look at Nehemiah 4:8-9. Nehemiah 4:8-9. When Nehemiah and the people of Israel were rebuilding Jerusalem and rebuilding the wall, they had these enemies, Tobiah and, what's the other guy's name? Sanballat and Tobiah. And these guys were giving Nehemiah all kinds of grief, and they were trying to fight against them and stop the building program. And it says there in verse 8, Nehemiah 4:8-9. It says, "And conspired all of them together to come to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them." So I like this, what Nehemiah did here. And this is what it says in Proverbs 21:31. It says, "The horse is prepared against the day of battle, but safety is of the Lord." So they prepared their horse against the day of battle, if you will. They set a watch, you know, I'm sure an armed guy, armed men watching. But then they also committed it to the Lord because they made their prayer unto God. So we should do both. We should watch and pray. Isn't that what Jesus taught us? Watch and pray. Don't just pray, but watch. Watch and pray. And these guys, they actually did something about it. If you look down just a couple of verses later in verses 17 and 18, it says, "They which build it on the wall, and they that bear burdens with those that laded, every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon. For the builders, every one had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me." This is what I call carrying your gun to work, right? They literally worked with one hand doing the work and the other hand on their sword. And, I mean, I suppose there's probably places in Kansas City where you would probably want to work, you know, with one hand on your tool and one hand on your gun, I suppose. But anyway, the Bible's got no problem with carrying your gun to work. Your employer might have a problem with it, but God's got no problem with it. So, do it at your own risk. Look at Matthew 26:41. This is where Jesus told the disciples to watch and pray. Matthew 26:41. There's nothing that irritates me more than going to a place of business and seeing a sign that says no guns allowed. It's just the dumbest thing. Why don't you just put a big sign that says, please rob me? I mean, please rob me. We are unarmed here. We're like sheep for the slaughter. Just come in and shoot us up because there is nobody here to defend us. What a dumb thing. A lot of times, if it's a private establishment, it's like a summary offense. It's not really, pretty much all they can do is just ask you to leave. If it's a federal building, you're going to go to jail. But if it's just a private business and they have a sign like that, I guess it'd be up to the person whether you want to obey it or not. But the thing is, it's not really even a crime and you're not going to really get in hardly any trouble for it. They could just ask you to leave. But I think you would be doing them a service by breaking their own law because you could be protecting the people in there and yourself and them for that matter. So what a stupid thing. Matthew 26 and verse 41. Watch and pray, Jesus said, that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Remember, don't just pray, but watch. You got to pay attention. If you're praying, Lord, deliver me not into temptation, or lead me not into temptation, but deliver me from evil, and you're just praying, but you're not watching, you're not paying attention, right? You can't expect too much, because the Lord expects you to do both. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 13. Yeah, I mean, imagine the guy, Lord, lead me not into temptation, deliver me from evil, as he's walking into the bar. You know, he's not watching. He's not paying attention. First Corinthians 16 and verse 13. Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong. Many exhortations in the Bible to watch. Be strong. Don't let the wicked take you down when they're watching you. Ephesians 6 and verse 18. Ephesians 6:18, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. There you go again, watch and pray. These two things keep going together. Colossians 4 and verse 2. Colossians 4:2. Continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving. It's almost like the Bible wants to emphasize that we should watch and pray. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 6. 1 Thessalonians 5:6. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. Sleeping here, speaking of like a spiritual slumber, like where you're not paying attention, right? Where you're just kind of laying back and taking a nap, spiritually speaking. We're not supposed to do that. Always have to be on our guard. There's never a time when we can let our guard down. Now, as a pastor, I'm called the overseer, which means that I have to watch too. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 5. 2 Timothy, pardon me. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 5. So I've got to be watching myself, like all of you do, but then I always have to be watching for the church. Watching both for enemies without, trying to destroy the church, and enemies within that try to corrupt the church as well and bring in false doctrine and things like that. And I've had to deal with that, unfortunately. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 5. This is written to a preacher. But watch thou in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry. So part of making full proof of my ministry is not just doing the work of the evangelism or the evangelist. That's the fun part, right? When you get to go out and preach the gospel somewhere. That's what my preacher friends used to always tell me that before I was a preacher. You know, the preaching's the easy part. It's the fun part. And at that time, I'm thinking, the easy part? It's hard work. You're searching the scriptures and making outlines and getting up there and making a presentation in front of people. That's not easy. That's hard. That's the easy part. They're right. That is the easy part. Go with through I went through the last 6 months. And I'll tell you, preaching is the easy part. And then, of course, there's that part there about enduring afflictions. That's not exactly easy either. I remember that's what Pastor Mott told me. You probably remember it too at my ordination. That was his exhortation at my ordination, to endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Hebrews 13 and verse 17. Hebrews 13:17. Obey them that have the rule over you, and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls. This is talking about the preacher, the elders, overseers, as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy, not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. So that's part of my job, is to watch. Watch over you individually, watch over you as a church. And, you know, don't be paranoid. Don't think that I'm scrutinizing you or anything. And I just say, you know what? Just be yourselves. And if you do something wrong and it's something that's just bad enough that I have to tell you about it, then I'll tell you about it. And then, well, then you'll be on the right track, right? And if you're not doing anything wrong, then you got nothing to worry about, right? So it's not like you have to be on eggshells around me or something. Just be yourselves. I mean, that's what I always used to do. And I'll leave you with these couple of verses. That the righteous man who watches at wisdom's gate is blessed. So if we do what God says and watch and pray, then we will be blessed. Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 34. Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 34. It says, blessed is the man that heareth me. This is wisdom speaking. Watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. The man that does so is blessed. Look at Luke 12, 37 through 38. Jesus taught that the man that watches will be blessed. I think this is when he's referring to the second coming. He also did Matthew 24, but I put Luke 12 in here for some reason. Luke 12, 37 through 38. He said, blessed are those servants whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find watching. Verily I say unto you, that he shall gird himself, and make them to sit down to meat, and will come forth and serve them. And if he shall come in the second watch, or come in the third watch, and find them so, blessed are those servants. Because we don't know when Jesus is going to return. This is the Lord that he's speaking of there in this parable. We don't know when Jesus is going to return. Could be in the second watch, or in the third watch. It could be at night, so-called, when everybody else is sleeping, right? But we're supposed to be watching. I'm speaking in a spiritual sense here. And look at what it says there. And you just think about this. I was thinking about this when I was reading this today. It just blows my mind. He says there that the Lord, when he cometh, if he finds you watching, verily I say unto you that he shall gird himself, that is the Lord, and make them to sit down to meat, and will come forth and serve them. Jesus Christ is going to be serving us. That's what the parable says. If he finds us watching at the second coming, there's a marriage supper of the Lamb coming. And I mean, if this verse means what it appears to mean, what it says, he's going to be serving us. You think about that. Jesus said, I came to serve, right? He said that in the Gospels. If he finds you watching.
Never noticed that.
I didn't either. And I don't know what else to make of that except what it says. Luke 12, 37. I mean, it is a parable, but parables mean something. I mean, there's kind of an application there, right? Look at Revelation. I'll give you this one, just for the last one. Revelation 16 and verse 15. And Jesus served his disciples when he was on this earth. He washed their feet, you know. Revelation 16 and verse 15. Jesus said, behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked, and they see his shame. You see the connection of thought there, watching and keeping his garments. Where Jude is told to hate even the garments spotted by the flesh, we're told. So when you watch, you keep your, in other words, keep yourself from sin. That's what watching is all about. And when you do that, we are blessed. And we have a blessing waiting for us at the second coming. So next time I'm going to pick up there with verse 33. because the verse 33 really is the continuation of this. So the wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him, but then it tells us that the Lord is not going to leave him in his hand nor condemn him when he is judged. So when that happens, even if the wicked does get away with it and does try to catch us and snare us and does something to us, the Lord's not going to let him get away with it and prosper.
Yeah.